See the topic on the screen there, Krishna and the Credit Crunch. Something very much in people's minds nowadays with the economic downturn. We thought we'd be remiss in our duties not to address the credit crunch. And our first little slide here is a cartoon of a couple of kids eating some cereal called Credit Crunch, extra brand with sticks and twigs. And the one boy says to his brother, "So how long do we have to eat this crud?" "As long as mom and dad have a subprime mortgage, we're eating it." And then he says here, "We'd like to check out of the American dream." She says, "Let's see, you've given back the car, the house, the credit cards. That leaves you with late fees, interest, taxes, and interest on the taxes. Would you like to put that on a 5-year payment plan?" Anyone like to adjust that a little bit so we stay within the screen here? I think you can just move this thing here and it'll make it a smaller picture. There we go. Chanaka Pandit, a moralist who lived 3 centuries before Christ, he said there are 3 things that you have to take immediate action about. And if you don't completely exterminate them, they make your life miserable. And they're antithetical to spiritual advancement. First one is fire. If you don't completely put out the fire, do everything that Smokey Bear advises you to do. If you leave any embers, those embers are likely to cause another conflagration. And so one should completely extinguish a fire. One should also extinguish disease completely. Have you ever had a course of antibiotics where the doctor says, take these every day, 2 for 10 days? But after 3 or 4 days, you're feeling pretty good, and you say, oh, I don't need these anymore. And what happens? The virus and the bacteria come raging back with twice the force and twice the imperviousness to your antibiotics. So you need to take the course as long as the doctor prescribes it, long after you start feeling better. Now, if fire is so dangerous, potentially fatal, and disease can also be fatal if not untreated, then we have to treat death on the same level of seriousness. It's right up there. It's right up there with fire and disease. Just like if you don't deal with fire very seriously, it'll be fatal. If you don't deal with disease very seriously, it'll be fatal. And if you don't eliminate death, completely death, it will also be fatal, at least to your spiritual life. So Chanaka Pandit is putting this as one of the priorities in life for people who have spiritual aspirations. And he himself was a paragon of virtue. Chanaka was the prime minister of the government. And on one occasion, he was doing the government books by a little lamp with some oil in it. You can see here on the right-hand side. A friend came to visit him, and as the friend was sitting down and they were going to have a person talk, Chanaka said, just hold on a second. He extinguished this oil lamp and lit another one, which kept burning during the duration of their talk. And when their talk had concluded and Chanaka was going back to his books, he brought back the first lamp and prepared to light it. And his friend, being curious, said, why did you put this lamp and bring the other one, and now you're putting that one and bring the other one? Isn't it the same thing? Chanaka explained that when you came, I was doing the books for the government, and so I was using the government oil. Now, we're talking about you know, something that's not even worth 2 pennies. But when we had personal talks, then I wanted to use my own oil. Now you're leaving, I'm going back to the government, so I'm going to use the government books. So this is complete accountability, complete trustworthiness. And he didn't want to be in debt, even though no one would know about it. No one would know about his doing this on the government's dime. He didn't want that debt in his mind. He didn't want that karmic debt hanging over him. So scrupulous was he in following his own advice of eradicating death. Don't we wish the American government would follow the same dictum? Actually, this is a cartoon that's about 6 months old. And when this cartoon came out, the government debt was $9 trillion. And just in the last 6 months, it's gone from $9 trillion to $60 trillion. Here are the bankers reading a proclamation. "We want to thank our grandchildren without whom these rescue plans would not have been possible." Credit spending, according to Bhagavad Gita, is stealing. When you buy something, or when you acquire something with money you don't have, isn't that stealing? Isn't that a pretty good definition of stealing? You're getting something, you're taking possession of something for which you haven't got the money to pay it. I don't know about you, but that sounds pretty much like stealing to me. In the Bhagavad Gita it says, Ishtan bhogani bodeva dasanti yam bhavita terdatan yo bhaktasthene vicha. The Lord, the Supreme Lord Krishna, has established a universal system of management by which various divinities called demigods are in charge of the necessities of life. And when we acknowledge the demigods as representatives of the Lord and perform sacrifice on their behalf, then all of our necessities of life are supplied. But if we don't acknowledge the system which is set up by the Lord and just take everything as our due, then we become thieves. You know, a man walks down the street and he sees a car with the keys in it. He says, well, it's just sitting here. It doesn't appear to be owned by anybody. It's just meant for me. And he gets in and he starts up the car and he drives it up. That's his reasoning. That just because it's there, it must be meant for him. So the reasoning of the thief is that taking water, electricity, and all the foodstuffs and nutritional things that we have as granted, as his given, without offering or acknowledging our debt of gratitude in return. Such a person becomes a debtor. We spend money we don't have to buy things we don't need to impress people that we don't even like. In debt we trust. Remember the old saying, in God we trust? But now it's changed. In debt we trust. Certain things about debt, characteristics. One is it catches up to you. Two is it's an emotional burden that weighs you down. And three, it's a trap. And those who are in debt are caught like an animal. They have to borrow further in order to become the lender's slave. And here's a little graphic. Carrying debt. It's easier to get into debt than it is to get out of it. Have any of you found that to be true? It's easier to get into debt than it is to get out of it. And these are some synonyms for the word debt that you'll never find any contract. When you take out a mortgage or you do a hire purchase account in your car, you'll never find these words in the contract. Because if you did, you might be less likely to sign the contract. But these are synonyms for the word debt. Owe, obligated, liable, needy, wolf at the door, rack and ruin, bereft, busted, in arrears, encumbered, unable to make ends meet, insolvent, beggared, below the line, in hoc, damage. What's the damage? And bad news. What's the bad news? The emotional toll of debt are these items here. You feel isolated. You feel in over your head and you feel that nobody can help you. And you don't know how to even begin to crawl out of the hole of debt. You feel emasculated in your social life. You feel lack of confidence. You feel that the world is shaking underneath your feet. You feel out of control when things are just spiraling with interest and penalties beyond your ability to even imagine getting even again. You feel anxiety because, after all, you have voluntarily given up your freedom. You have voluntarily enslaved yourself to lenders. That's what modern advertising is all about. Buy it now. Actually, nobody buys it now. We just put a small down payment and we end up paying for it for the next 10 years or so. At least when you have to pay cash for something, you pay the cash, you acquire the item, and then sometime afterwards you get sick and tired of it. But nowadays, we acquire the item, we get sick and tired of it, and long after we're sick and tired of it, we're still paying for it. Now that's really stupid, don't you think? That's really stupid. And the result is sleeplessness. We can't sleep because basically we're owned by other people. I owe, and off to work I go. Here's a quote. Truth in lending is non-existent in credit card charges. The lenders will say anything to get you in debt, to get you under their power, to basically imprison you. The lenders can surreptitiously amass exorbitant late charges plus more exorbitant charges for exceeding the credit card limit. That is like a cruel parent tripping a child into a mud puddle and then punishing the child with further strictures. In 1984, I was living in Culver City, and we needed a car to run back and forth between Culver City and Utah. So there was a car advertised in Culver City Mazda for $5,400. That was the price of a new car in 1984. It was a model just like this, the B2200. And so I've never had credit in my life. I've always been a devotee. I've never had a bank account in my name. I've never, ever had credit. If you run my name past TRW, it doesn't exist. You know how you always get these these notices in the mail. It says you're pre-approved for a Visa or MasterCard. You're pre-approved. So one day I took one of these and I said, okay, well, I'm pre-approved. So I filled it out, I sent it back, and they sent an answer. They said, you're denied. That I thought I was pre-approved. No, you're denied. So I wanted to acquire this car, and I didn't want to do it on credit. So I have $5,400 cash from cookie sales. So I went over to Culver City Mazda, and I said, I'm just going to go over to the bank and get you a cashier's check, and I just want to know what the amount is with the taxes and license fees and so on and so forth. And they said, you got to be kidding. I said, kidding? You advertised $5,400. I just want to know how much the amount is. I said, no, we're not going to sell you the car for $5,400. I said, you're not going to sell me the car for $5,400? Well, what'd you put the ad in the newspaper for? Said, we don't want to make any money selling you a car for $5,400. You have got to take out a higher purchase contract for this car. And, of course, it was in-house financing. Otherwise, we're not going to sell you the car. And I said, there's got to be someone I can complain about this to. You say $5,400, I come in with $5,400, you say I'm not going to sell you the car. What's going on here? What's going on is exactly what we just talked about. There's no truth in lending. Finally, we made a deal. If I bought the radio and the car didn't have a back bumper, I bought the bumper, and then I bought a 3-year service contract for $700, then they would sell me the car for a cash price. Fortunately, I was able to cancel the service contract the next day and get a full refund. If you're in over your head in debt, there are 6 signs that are danger signs. You need to be aware of this. First is that when you walk into a store and you've got cash, and you can pay cash for it, use your credit card instead. You're thinking, well, maybe I'll just save my cash. There might be something later that I could use the cash for. So you use your credit card when you could have paid cash, and your credit card balance thereby grows every month. That's a danger sign. Second danger sign is a lack of contentment. Lack of contentment means you're looking for some acquisition or purchase, some bell or whistle to make you happy, because you're basically not happy. You know, compulsive consumerism occurs only because we're not happy sitting in our room chanting Hare Krishna or meditating or doing something simple and very spiritual. Do your children know the difference between no and not yet? If they want something, you say, not yet, do they take that as a no and rant and rave and beat their heads on the floor? Or they understand it for what it actually is? Not now, but you can get it later. So in our modern society, people, they don't want to accommodate not yet. It's got to be right now, and they can't wait for it, and that's due to a lack of contentment. Third danger sign is you presume upon the future. Well, you know, I'm going to work past retirement so we can do this. Well, I'm due for that raise next year, so we'll do this. I'm definitely going to get the bonus, so we'll do this, and we'll do this. That's failure to plan. That's failure to plan. It's more fun to spend money than it is to save it, and it is more fun to spend money than it is to plan for it. So we delay our payments, we pay with a minimum amount, and we keep our debts outstanding. People that walk into a store with a credit card tend to spend 23% more money than people who walk into a credit card and into a store without a credit card. We don't know what the future is. The very foundational principle of spiritual life is don't presume upon the future. One of the main differences between a spiritualist and a materialist is a spiritualist thinks, I may die at any moment. I may die at any moment. And when I die, I want to be solvent. I don't want to be in debt. Because if I die and I'm in debt, I have to carry that debt into my next life. And I don't want to do that. So I'm going to make sure that I'm solvent at any moment. Whereas a materialistic person, they think I'll live forever. Prabhupada used to give the example of Paris. Napoleon built Paris so grandly to last for hundreds and hundreds of years. The Arc de Triomphe, the Champs-Élysées, so solidly built for durability. Prabhupada said, all those are there. All those buildings that Napoleon built are still there. But where is Napoleon? He's long since gone. He was presuming upon the future. Unable to tithe or to save, you live beyond your means. A wise man saves for the future. A foolish man spends what he has. It might be an irony that's difficult for you to comprehend, that if you're in debt, one of the major steps for getting out of debt is every month give something to your temple, give something to your church, and put something away for your own emergency funds. Someone may say, well, how by inquiring two more obligations do I get rid of the obligations that I have? Because this builds discipline. And actually, you don't give God 10%. Everything belongs to Him. He owns 100%. So you get 90% back, which is actually a pretty good deal. So you're not really giving 10%. You're getting 90% back from the Lord. And you're building character, and you're setting a good example for your children. Most people that get into financial trouble, financial difficulty, they did it because their parents had not set a good, solvent, sensible financial example. The parents weren't talking at home about giving to good causes or balancing their expenditures between necessities and good works that they might do. They didn't talk at home about saving so that maybe they could go on a mission and do some good somewhere in the country. They didn't talk about these things at home. They were out of balance. They were always struggling to catch up. And they were always spending more than they were making. And you can bet your bottom dollar that the children will be doing the same thing when they reach maturity, because they didn't get that example from their parents. So to set that example is one of the greatest things that you can do as a parent. And when we decide whether we can afford to give back to God 10% of the 100% that He's giving us, here's some helpful moves. Gratitude for the past. God has brought me to this point. He's brought me to this point. He's given me so many bounteous gifts and brought me to this point. So if I give back to God, if I give something to God, then I'm going to be bereft. Then I'm going to starve in the future. Maybe I haven't even given anything to this point. And yet He's maintained me. He hasn't begrudged me my Scrooge-ness, you see what I'm saying? So then if I begin to give something, then it's going to get tighter or not so? I think not so. So gratitude for the past, trust in the present, as well as faith in the future. He's taken care of me in the past. He's taken care of my family, my kinsmen. He's doing it in the present. So why not have confidence and faith that He'll do so in the future as well? In the 80s, people used to save 18% of their income. I'm sorry, prior to the 80s, people used to save 18% of their income. In the 1980s and in the 1990s, people saved an average of 4% of their income. And in the 2000s, they spend more than they earn. Our normal healthy body temperature is 98.6. That's a normal healthy body temperature. Now, if someone thinks 98.6 is good, 103 would be better, that's a fatal miscalculation. So we do need certain things to keep body and soul together. We need a roof over our head. We need some sort of transportation. But if we don't need a five-bedroom house and we could get along with a one-bedroom house, if we don't need a BMW but we could drive a Toyota Corolla, then why should we waste the valuable days, minutes, and seconds of this human form of life in order to chase after things which are temporary? We have to make certain concessions to survival, but we don't have to tragically sell ourselves out, sell our soul off for things which are temporary. Each one of us is eternal. We're going to survive beyond this, the things that we own. We're going to survive beyond this body. We're going to survive beyond the universe itself. So do you really want to sell out your eternal soul for a piece of metal or some wood or some stucco? That is actually the greatest tragedy, because each and every moment of the human life is so valuable, you can't buy it back for millions and millions of gold coins. So before you make a decision about how you're going to spend the next 20 years of your life or a whole season of your life paying for a mortgage on a house you really don't need or a car that you only bought for prestige, you should very considerately and very, very seriously consider the decision and how your greatest asset, your greatest treasure, the time of this human form of life, should most optimally be spent. And here's another symptom of people who are in debt, a danger sign. They start thinking, well, I'll just spend irresponsibly now, but I'll get it all back. I have a surefire system. I have a scam. I have a plan. I have a program. I have an investment portfolio that's all going to make it okay overnight. With one sweep of the wand, I'm going to get out of debt. And this is a sign of madness, actually. And if you've ever gone to Las Vegas and you've watched the people mesmerized by the slot machines, they are definitely mad. They are definitely mad. And these are some adjectives that could very well refer to them. Foolish, foolhardy, rash, reckless, madcap, wild, ridiculous, half-baked, ill-thought-out, ill-conceived, crackpot, and feverish. The key to good financial management is not to give more, but to get along with less. Some things are not necessarily bad, they're just not necessary. So if you want to be debt-free, you can do a triple financial reverse. Just like in football, quarterback goes this way, he gives it to this guy, and then he gives it to that guy, and then they get around the end and they score a touchdown. So a triple financial reverse would consist of three phases. Give to Krishna and give to yourself. In India, the system is that whatever income you get, you give your first check, your first expenditure is to the temple and to yourself before you spend any other money. And whatever percentage that you've decided upon, even if it's only a modest 1%, you're going to give back to God 1%. You do that before you make any other expenditures. And then you also put 1% in your own personal savings account. That's the first step. And of course, the second step is don't spend more than you make. Blaise Pascal, a European philosopher, said, all the troubles of the world come because people can't sit at home peacefully. They can't sit at home peacefully. If you simply learn the art of chanting Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. You know, that's been off the whole time.
No, it's been cracked.
Huh?
I think it's been...
I just turned it on. When Rabindranath Tagore first went from India to England, he was amazed because England is kind of a narrow country. Do you know how wide it is at its widest point? 200 or 300 miles. So Rabindranath Tagore gets off the boat, he goes to England, and he sees cars going at these high speeds, you know, 70, 80 miles an hour. And he thinks that they're going so fast that they're just going to go off the other end, you know, just shoot off the west coast, shoot off the east coast into the English Channel and into the Atlantic Ocean, you know. And he couldn't see for the life of why people were running, you know, there's people, 50% of the people are running 70 miles an hour in this direction, 50% of the people are running 70 miles. So why don't I just stay home, you know, be happy? What's the point of all this feverishness? And Henry Ford said that if anyone were to go faster than 40 miles an hour, they would go mad. And he was right. So don't overspend. Learn the art of contentment. Mantra meditation, spiritual realization, purpose for which you're put here. And then repay the principal and the interest. And you will have achieved a triple financial reverse. I took some liberties with this verse from the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says in the 18th chapter, give up all other varieties of financial misadventures and just surrender unto me. I shall protect you from all indebtedness. Do not worry. Do not hesitate. We all have debts. When we are born, we have debt to the earth for sustaining us. We have debt to our parents. We have debt to the scriptures that give us codes of living, to the great saints and sages, and to our guru who model perfect exemplary behavior for us. So it's not that we're actually going to be debt-free, but Krishna says, if you give all your debts to me, I will absolve you of them. This is like watering the root of the tree. Rather than trying watering the branches, the leaves, and the twigs, we just put water in the root of the tree, and by that one thing, all other things are accomplished. So Krishna says, if you do for me, if you sing for me, if you work for me, if you cook for me, if you clean for me, if you do the performing arts for me, if you do the books for me, if you do everything that you do, you just do it for me, then you don't have to worry about any other type of indebtedness. And I definitely guarantee you that financial indebtedness will be the least of your problems. If you accept that we all owe one big debt to Krishna, and in exercising that debt, all other debts are taken care of. The most popular temple in India is Tirupati. Jai Krishna and I were there. And it's a funny story that many, many centuries ago, the Supreme Lord Krishna had incarnated on the planet as Srinivas. And he courted Padmavati. This was actually Krishna and Radha. This is Lakshmi and Narayan. They take birth a lifetime after lifetime. They're eternal companions. So in this particular incarnation, Krishna appeared as Srinivas, and he didn't have any money. And Padmavati was from a very, very wealthy family. And so Padmavati's parents, they wanted a big dowry. They wanted to pay a they wanted Krishna to pay a huge amount of money. And nobody had that kind of money. So Krishna went to Kubera, the treasurer of the demigods, and he took out a loan at a huge, exorbitant, killer, vig, you know, interest rate. And ever since then, about 800 years ago, Every person that goes to the Tirupati temple, there's a big donation box. It's not like this. It's like an 8-foot wide basketball net. You know, and it's not netted, it's not see-through, it's opaque cloth, and you actually have to get up on your tiptoes to drop stuff in. And people drop gold bars in, they drop earrings, jewelry, even poor people. They're trying to help Krishna absolve his debt. And in this lies the essence of all spiritual life. It's the essence of all spiritual life. You accept your indebtedness to Krishna, and then every other type of debt is automatically written off. Now, if you were to tithe, there's an example. Here's some figures. If you're 25 years old, you're earning $15,000 a year. By the time you're 45 years old, if you've given 10% of your salary to yourself and to Krishna, you would have given $30,000 to the temple, and you would have $85,930 in your own savings account. If you're 35 years old and you're earning $30,000 a year, by the time you're 55 years old, 20 years later, by tithing, you would have given $60,000 to Krishna and you would have $171,000 in your own savings account. And if you're 40 years old and you're earning $60,000 a year, 20 years later, at the age of 60, you would have given $120,000 to Krishna and you'd have $343,000 in your own personal savings account. Getting out of debt. One, list all that I owe and own. If you don't know what you can spend, that's a formula for disaster. Ignorance and easy credit. Money doesn't talk, it walks away quietly. You do your Christmas shopping, you need to know in advance what it is you have to spend, and you need to stay within those limits. And what you can't do without is an idol. Don't purchase anything that you wouldn't loan out. Now that would be an interesting rule of thumb. Before you buy anything, consider, is this something that I would loan out? Because if it's so dear to you that you wouldn't loan it out, then you're worshiping an idol. You're worshiping an idol. Have you ever, girls, gone out with a guy? Seems like a nice enough guy and all. But then you'd sort of lean against his car and say, that's my car. Don't lean against my car. That's my car. You're a nice girl. Nobody leans against my car. Or you're in marriage, and the wife comes up to the husband and she says, honey, the kids are starving, These kids are starving. Do you think, how about that gun collection? Oh, no, those are my guns. Oh, but the kids are hungry, their ribs are showing. Not my guns. Anything but my guns, Well, that shows you love your guns more than your kid, and you love your car more than your girlfriend. So if you're thinking of buying something and it's not something you wouldn't loan out, think again. Because you're actually acquiring an idol. You're actually putting something in the core of your heart that you're cherishing more than relationships with your wife and your friends, and you're ultimately alienating yourself from God. Now sometimes we see things at sale prices, especially nowadays. Everything's on sale. Everything's cheap. And it might be easy to acquire it, but how much does it cost to maintain it? It's not just the initial cost of purchase, but what does it cost to maintain it? What is it cost in the long run? And then repayment plan. You need to get counseling. If you want to buy something and you're in the throes of impulse, call up someone who doesn't have an emotional attachment to the object and ask their advice. Get the input from a disinterested party and bypass for yourself the emotional element of the purchasing contemplation. That can save you a lot of money. And here's something we did. Sharing a plan with creditors. When I was in Los Angeles, Rathyatra, I bumped into Rameshwar in the line at the buffet. And he says, please forgive me. Please forgive me. So what does he ask me to forgive me for? In 1982, when we bought the radio station here in Spanish Fork, we had $120,000 in the bank. I put a $60,000 down on the radio station. And Rameshwar, he took the other $60,000 to bail out New York Temple for a mortgage. He literally took it from me. And 35 years later, he said, please forgive me for doing that. We had $7,000 worth of checks bounced, and we had no money after having just made this huge commitment. It took us 7 years to get out of debt because of that little coup of his. And 35 years later, he apologized for doing that. And it says, if you're sorry for having done something, there are two things you need to do. You need to express regret, and you need to give restitution. So I didn't say anything by saying, well, I'm glad to have your regrets. Now, what's $60,000 with interest after 25 years, if you really want to make it right? But it was for another Krishna conscious project, so no harm done. But we did have about $30,000 worth of debts and no money all of a sudden to deal with those debts. And we seriously thought of declaring bankruptcy. But what we did was, someone advised us, call up all your creditors. Call up all the people to whom you owe money. And we did that. And we said one thing to all of them. We said, we owe you X amount of money and we owe so many other people. That comes to about $25,000. We cannot pay this. So you have two choices. We can either declare bankruptcy and you can go through the court system to get your pennies on the dollar, or you can all agree to take 10%. But everybody has to agree. If there's one creditor that doesn't agree, then the whole deal is off. And everybody agreed. And they readily and happily agreed. So for a $25,000 debt, we got out of it for $2,500. So that's something you can consider to do. Share the plan with the creditors and work with them. Then, of course, add no new debt and stick to the plan. Add no new debt and stick to the plan, and you'll have accomplished a triple financial reverse. Do it Krishna's way, trust Krishna, and then just keep on doing it. Financial mismanagement is a symptom of not having a good life manager. Think of Krishna. Think of God. He created the universe. He maintains the universe. He provides the sustenance. Every living being within a half an hour of getting up in the morning has got food, they've got shelter, all the necessities of life are met, and that's only because of the plan and the organizational ability of God. So if you make God your life planner and you resign as the Lord of the universe, don't you think you'd be better off? I gave this example of Almighty Bruce. Any of you saw the movie Almighty Bruce? One of the devotees told me about it, that Bruce was, God made Bruce God. And Bruce, in the course of being God, he's getting all these requests by email. People are sending him all their requests by email. And he's, first he starts, he only types with two fingers. So he's trying to answer everyone's requests by email. And one of the most often repeated requests is, can I win the lottery? Can I win the lottery? So he gets a folder of all the people that have asked him to win the wild lottery, and he just types yes, and then he punches it, and it grants all their requests. So he goes to sleep. Next morning, there's smoke fumes, there's explosions, there's gunshots outside his window. He goes down on the street, people are overturning cars, they're smashing windshields with baseball bats. It's total anarchy. He says, what's everyone so upset about? Guy says, I won the lottery, but I only got 7 cents. I thought that was pretty funny. Anyway, he resigned from being God. So if you resign from being God and actually let God be your life manager, financial manager, you'll not be the loser, but you'll be the gainer by millions of times over. And here's another verse I took a couple of liberties with. From the second chapter, 38th verse, Krishna says, manage your finances for my sake, without considering happiness or distress, victory or gain, and by so doing, you will always remain unattached and free from bondage. In the minds of those who are too attached to sense enjoyment, and this describes the credit card spender, this describes to a T the credit card deficit spender. They cannot wait. They cannot wait. They have to have it now. In the minds of those who are too attached to sense enjoyment and material outlets, and who would be bewildered by such things, the resolute determination for devotional service to the Supreme Lord simply does not take place. And then this verse here, as the last of the triplets, you have a right to perform your prescribed duty, but you are not the owner of the money which results. Never consider yourself the cause of the fruits of your activities, and never be attached to not doing your duty. We all have talents, and we have abilities, and each one of us is unique. And we have a right to be who we are. We have a right to act in a way that God created us to be. We have a right to derive immense, unlimited satisfaction and pleasure from that. We have a right to have fun doing it. But our motive should not be for the fruits of the action. Krishna has given us that talent and given us that ability, and it should be used to do good to other people according to His plan. Our talents are not meant just to make money and have a big bank account. The only reason that you're given your talents is to do good to yourself and to do good to other people. Otherwise, there's no reason. And if you don't use your talents in that way, in that selfless way, then they'll be taken away. They'll be taken away. If I give you a $100 bill and all you know how to do is to light your cigar with it, I'm not going to give you a $100 bill anymore. and I'll try and take away the one I gave you. Prabhupada says here, in the material existence of life, one is certainly influenced by propensities for lust and desire for dominating the resource of material nature. Desire for overlording and for sense gratification is the greatest enemy of the conditioned soul. But by the strength of Krishna consciousness, one can control the senses, mind, and intelligence. The crux of the matter here is that when you go out with your credit card, you've been sold a bill of goods by the advertiser, that everything here is for your enjoyment, for your exploitation. And you go into the store with that in mind. I am the enjoyer. I am the monarch of all that I survey. And that is simply wrong. That is just absolutely dead wrong. You are not the enjoyer, you're not the owner, you're not the proprietor. God created everything, including you. You belong to God, and the talents and abilities and wealth that we have is meant for glorifying God. But we are not masters, we are servants. I gave a talk once at the University of Utah in a philosophy class. Dean Chatterjee had invited me. And there was a fellow that raised his hand, and he was quite upset, actually. He said, look, he said, God put everything here for our enjoyment. And so God is happy when we enjoy. That's what makes God happy. He made this world, he put us in it, and he said, go for it, you see. And that's what made God happy. And I said, you are dead wrong. You are dead wrong. You have a total misconception of the cause of creation and the mood of the Creator. He created this for his enjoyment. And when we symphonize, when we harmonize with that purpose of creation, we actually enjoy like anything. Example is given, the finger cannot eat food separately. It has no power to independently enjoy. But when it puts food into the mouth and it reaches the stomach, then not only the finger, but all the other parts of the body enjoy. So we are constitutionally not independent enjoyers. God, who can be compared to the stomach, he's the supreme enjoyer. And when we constitutionally, as parts and parcels, serve the whole with our mind, with our finances, with our energy, with our wealth, and with our body, then not only do we enjoy, but every other living being enjoys as well. So in Krishna consciousness, we don't cultivate the illusion that we're masters, but rather the reality that we're servants. In a world where everyone else wants to dominate, wants to be master, wants to be have their name on everybody else's lips and their name in the newspaper, we are trying to become servants, because that's the way that we'll get released from the entrapment of material life. So with me, please, if you agree with anything that we said in the last half an hour, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.